GalaxyCon Live is the place for you to hear about fandom from the celebrities who bring geek culture to life.
Welcome, friends and fans, to another episode of GalaxyCon Live, where we are bringing the convention experience directly to you. We hope your new year is off to a great start. It's about to get even better because today we are joined by an amazing guest. So without further ado, let's bring him out. We apologize for the late delay, but we had some unexpected technical difficulties. And now, our guest today is an actor, producer, and artist whose body of work includes Dead Calm, Twin Peaks, Phantom, the highly undervalued film adaptation of Orlando, and has recently been seen in the reboot of MacGruber. Today, he joins us to discuss this fantastic career. Please welcome back Mr. Billy Zane.
Greetings. Hello, friends.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good, yeah, hey. Billy. How you been, brother?
I've been great. Hello, hello. Hope you had a fine holiday season. I'm trying to milk a little bit of the last vestiges of kind of a California winter up here at Big Bear Mountain.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
They're frosty. Getting a little icy now. We had some fresh powder last week, but still pretty slick. You know, the kids are in a lesson, so I was able to break away.
Right on. Well, Billy, once again, thank you for joining us here on the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Glad to see you in good health and good spirit. And you've been doing really good work lately. Again, MacGruber, a lot of fun. It was great seeing you in that role. And since we're one-on-one today, I always ask this whenever I have a solo guest. I'd like to go back to being you a little bit. What got you interested in acting?
My parents were actors in Chicago on stage for years. So I grew up watching them perform. It was kind of in the DNA and in the family line, I guess. They never pressured nor expected my sister and I to get into it, but it was a natural progression. And exposure to a lot of great classic cinema made me appreciate Hollywood and old Hollywood and want to be part of new Hollywood, which was shaping around the time that I was turning 18, the beginning of the then youth market, I guess, was really kind of brewing. So it seemed like good timing to go to Hollywood as a teenager during the age of teen movies in the 80s.
Was there any of the classic Hollywood, either films or actors that you came to admire?
Certainly. Gene Kelly heads the list just as a consummate actor, performer, choreographer, director. You know, just a perfect, well-rounded artist, a specimen, you know.
Absolutely. His Three Musketeers is brilliant.
Oh, it's amazing. That's an amazing film. And his parody of it in Singing in the Rain is equally fantastic. Or The Pirate, one of my favorites, lesser-known film of his that Vincent Minnelli directed with his then-wife, Judy Garland.
Yeah.
Amazing film. Did not do very well when it came out, but it's quite brilliant. Really very funny film. Cary Grant, you know, Joel McRae I always liked, and Preston Sturges movies, comedies mostly. Bogey, just for the sake of Bogey.
Sure.
Because he was cool. But yeah, a lot of greats who I can't help but borrow from.
it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, and it's fair to say that Dead Calm sort of like leveled you up and sort of was your first sort of breakout role?
I would say yes, that was my first lead. I did something prior called The Brotherhood of Justice, which was the beginning of my kind of dabbling. And well, that's not true. Back to the Future, I was a bully. I've been playing, you know, bad guys, I guess, for a while, you know.
You also did an episode of Crime Story, a show that I absolutely adored, and I got to rewatch.
That's right.
I rewatched it during a lockdown during COVID, and it's on Peacock.
Those early years in Chicago, the early episodes, I think, were quite stunning. It was fun to be part of that with working with Farina and my then already pal Bill Campbell, now Billy Campbell. Mm. He was Bill.
Yeah. <back then.
laughs> That's a great show. But yeah, really fun characters. And then, yes, to your point, Dead Calm was probably the first breakout lead character.
And what a character it was.
Huey Warner. Yeah, he had issues.
Yeah, that's
a lot of trauma in real time, you know, happening to him.
No, absolutely. And hit the ground running. And I mean, another thing I can't ask you about the Back to the Future stuff or we talked about the Phantom before. I would like to talk a little bit about Orlando, if that's cool, because I think that's another one that's kind of fallen under the cracks. And I think That was another one I watched the past couple of years ago, and it still held up tremendously.
Sally Potter, wonderful director, testament to her and Tilda Swinton's work. It was a great collaboration on their part. It's a wonderful adaptation of a Virginia Woolf novel, an allegory for gender politics, you know, as seen through the ages as the character kind of time travels in a way and sex changes, really, and at the worst epochs and eras for a different gender. It really explores, you know, to be a man is to die for your country, to be a woman is to lose all your rights and have to be beholden to a man. So yeah. She keeps ping-ponging through the ages to a position of, you know, the least power, and it really examines society's ills when it comes to equanimity.
Very much so. Very, very much so. And of course, the Iceberg movie. Yeah. Dead Ahead, something like that. How did that begin?
Dead Ahead.
Yeah.
That was an audition. I think Jim Cameron wanted to meet with a few people. They had screened The Phantom and wanted to take a meeting. And a handful of folks, I guess, got to spend an hour with him and play. And it was a real fun collaborative process. So it was just spending time and coming up with cool ideas together and enjoying the process. I think kind of when you figure out you want to work with someone and, you know, you could spend 7 months and you don't really have to worry too much about them. Or that hopefully they'll contribute, you know, to your palate. And I was very grateful for that experience and process. He's an extraordinary fellow, really cool, down to earth cat with crazy skills. And but you know, a punster and loves, you know, good jokes and is a wit and is a bit of a daredevil. He's a cool cat.
Absolutely. Whoa. Uh-oh, we seem to have lost our guest's signal. Yeah, he's broadcasting from his car, and he's having some issues with that. So let's give it a second, and hopefully he's able to come back. To reflect a little bit about his body of work on the film Orlando, I really recommend our audience check it out if you want to see some really strong performances from him. And Deadcom 2, if you have not seen that. It's a wonderful thriller film that takes place at sea, and it got Billy his accolades from the Critics Association and for Best Actor as well, too. Excuse me a second, too. And of course, that way, too, hopefully he will bounce back on. And I'm sure everyone in our audience, fan of The Phantom as I am, hopefully you were able to join us last year. We did an event with him, with his castmate, Christy Swanson. And we talked at length about that, some of the stories, some of the working with Patrick McGoohan, a favorite actor of mine. And I got to talk directly with Lee Falk, the creator of The Phantom. So for Billy, it was a really good collaboration because not only did you get to work with Lee Falk, but he also got to work with the creator of the character. And his voice was legitimately heard. And that's something that I think keeps The Phantom a wonderful benchmark in the evolution and translation of comic book characters, comic strip characters into that. Because another thing about The Phantom too, and fans of it out there, I'm sure you're aware of, was that it came in at a very curious time. The Keaton Batman films and then the sequels and the direction they took, comic book films were sort of not sure where they were. They were still sort of half in the Adam West version and half in the idea that they were just for kids. And then The Phantom comes on out, which just its energy and its complete lack of cynicism, but the fact that it's a thrilling adventure. It's not an action film. It's an adventure in the purest sense. And that's one of the reasons why I certainly love it. And I hope our audience out there loves it too. We've got some great images for sale. I don't know where he is. Paul, let's do this. Can we open a dialogue with some of the people in our chat room? Because unfortunately, I don't have access to our chat room. But if anybody's got anything they just want to throw out, anything. I have a question for our chat room. What was your first Billy Zane film? And what made you like it so much? And I would like to see, if somebody's going to put it that way, I want to scroll at the bottom. And I'd like to hear some stories from you. And I do apologize for this. Hopefully our guest is going to be back on in a second. But I'd like to do this if we could. Oh, wait.
I'm back.
He's back. All right.
Was dropping. Hold on.
No problem.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm trying to load into the system here.
No worries. A little herky jerky, but we can see. We can hear you. That's the important thing.
This is really...
I think we've lost the audio. How we doing, Billy? Can you hear me and see me? We think you're frozen up. Oh, dear. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, we do apologize. Modern communication and Wi-Fi, he is literally on a mountain. I will say this much, though. If you have signed up for our one-to-one chats, it is a different format from this version that we use for our virtual panels. So usually any technical difficulties we have in this format do not get repeated for the one-to-one chat. So please don't worry about that. I'll tell you what, Paul, if we have some answers to my audience challenge, I'd love to hear from our audience. We could throw this on out. If somebody wants to share and tell some of their best memories of the cinematic roles. Or if you want, maybe we could play the trailer from, we can pull up the trailer from The Phantom. If we could do that. Maybe we can see that way too. A little bit of Phantom lore here. I'm wearing the rings that were limited editions. These were put out for the Phantom film. Most people have probably seen the skull one. This was the one of the two, but not a lot of people are aware of the friendship ring. The idea was the Phantom would punch you and then this would burn a hole into your cheek or wherever he slugged you at. You'd be tapping with the mark of the Phantom. The friendship sigil was usually put like inside somebody's wrist or something like that. That way they could identify themselves as, I'm a friend of the ghost who walks. So that's a little bit of a tribute there for you. I'm not sure if he does it recently, but I do know that Billy, when he does his appearances at tables, I know he has a collection of these rings that he does hand out occasionally. So by all means, if you ever get into it too. And well, all right, something happened. I don't know what. All right. I think maybe we're going to play the trailer. I do not know. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I do apologize. What? Something's going to happen. Okay. Stephanie, Titanic. Remington, Titanic. Ah, Brian, Back to the Future Part 2. Okay. Posse. Oh, Posse. Yeah, that's a good one. Titanic. Phantom and Titanic. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Titanic then. And just how important the film was. And I'm not going to say this necessarily about how great the film was. We all could agree how great it was, everything else too. But how important it was, because... what Cameron said about the collaboration and everything else was the dedication of the film. And I was a scoffer at first. I fully admit when I heard James Cameron, who at that point I was convinced was he's an action guy. I was like, why is he spending $150 million, which at that time was a gargantuan amount of money to spend on a feature film? Why is he making a movie that ends on a downer? And when I did see it, I did see it in the theaters and I ended up seeing it four times in the theaters because I was just in awe because what he created was an epic. He created an epic in the sense of David Lean, in the sense of just and here's the thing, the budget, you saw every penny, you saw every dime, you saw everything. And let's face it, Billy is one of the best villains in that film. He absolutely is. I mean, just the one lines like, just this, he is just so quintessential, the sneering upper class, just yeah, guy. And seeing his chemistry with David Warner. And if you've seen this, we've hosted David Warner at our physical shows, and he's been here on our virtual stage as well. He's an absolute gentleman, and he has spoken very well of his experiences on Titanic. And yes, and it still amazes me to this day that people still think that Titanic is a, well, it's a love story, everything else. It's an event. It is an action film. It is an adventure. And even though you kind of know how it ends, you become fully invested. And it is absolutely held up tremendously. I'll throw this out there too. Is anybody out there a fan of the Tales of the Crypt movie where Billy played the Collector, a demonic entity? That's a great one. Is really, really absolutely great one. And speaking of demonic entities, I don't know if we have any fans out there of Batman the Animated Series, but if you remember the episode featuring Etrigan the Demon from DC Comics and his counterpart Jason Blood, Billy did the voice of that too. It was for one episode, and if it wasn't for these places, I would have loved to have brought it up and discussed it with him. But yes, it's one of my favorite characters of the DC canon, and did a great job as well too, because his character starts off as a regular guy who kind of hulks out. He's like a mystical version of the Hulk. He does an incantation, turns into that demon, and excuse me, has to work with that too. So, and great. And the great thing, I was hoping I'd get a story about him too. The nice thing about most of those films or that series is that they were recorded troop style. Most animation is done individually, but no, in that case, they would bring in the whole cast as a radio show and record them outwards. So yes, again, our guest has a absolutely fantastic body of work. What else? Do we have any fans of MacGruber out there? If so, please check it out if you get a chance. It really is funny. I think it's kind of better. Okay, here's what we got here. Mickey the Titanic, or him on Jay Leno. I'll tell you what, producer Paul, I would like you to go to BillyZaneArt.com. And let's talk a little bit, in case you didn't know, if in audience out there too, when you get a chance, check that out. Our guest is also an expressionistic painter. I think he likes talking about it. And I actually plan on closing and talking about him with this way too. But his art is very, very interesting. He's got a wonderful expressionistic sort of style. And yes, he has had BillyZaneArt.com. He's got this really wonderful style that has a continuity to it as well. And he's had various showings out in the LA area. He's had some stuff gone on tour, I believe. And this is really definitely worth checking out. And this is something that, again, if you're not aware of, you really want to go and take a look at this. Hey, Paul, yeah, can we play that? Let's do that. Oops, is it doing something? And that Vimeo is tricky. Well, Paul, we're having difficulty on that. If you want to, we could throw up some video if we can. If we have some YouTube interview with him talking about his Titanic experience, we could do that. Also, if anybody else has anybody else from our audience to throw, oh, here we go. Got that flamenco thing. Oh my goodness. All right. All right. We've got some of this stuff here. Yeah, there you go. That's this piece is only 74,000. So. Ah, there he is. Hey, we were. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. I can hear you. I can see you. We were just taking a virtual tour of BillyZaneArt.com.
Oh, that's nice. Well, thank you. Good filler.
You've got some very nice art there.
Thank you very much.
No, indeed. Real quick, tell us a little bit about your art.
I started in that particular vein in 97 on location while filming Titanic. Actually, it was a means with which to pass downtime while there for 7 months in Mexico. And the piece behind me actually was one of my first, where I'm standing there, that piece behind me I did in Mexico. It's called Telemundo. And it looked like there's a little TV in the middle and something spiraling out of it. I'd paint them on the ground and then let the sun kind of bake them and contort them a little bit.
Yeah,
which were reminiscent of the kind of skins they would sell at the border when you'd cross from Tijuana into California.
Right.
Lots of, you know, and there was a lot of found art objects like lobster cages and things that would wash up. I would make sculpture out of. I was really enjoying my time. I was coming back to LA quite often, almost every weekend. But then once I started turning this the garage in my condo into an art studio, I found I just wanted to hang out in Mexico and make art. Wow. And then started showing like 10 years later, because I didn't do it in order to show. I just started accumulating a kind of big body of work for myself, really. And then was invited to exhibit. And then I was surprised and pleased that people found it authentic and liked it. And then asked me to do more shows and started collecting them. So go figure. This is something I love. I have a show on right now at the Four Seasons.
Oh, please, did we not lose him again? At the Four Seasons.
Oh, okay. There?
Yes, we're here. All right.
Good. Yeah, I have artwork seasons. Up at the Four Seasons, yep.
All right, right on. Yeah, right on. All right, well, Billy, while you were gone, real quick, I gave everybody a capsulized review. Talked a little bit about some of the apocrypha of the Phantom, how you got to work with Patrick McGoohan, and how you actually got to meet Lee, and how he was on there, and that collaboration, and some of the other stuff. And I even got to share a very, very minor blip, but something I appreciated. I love your version of Etrigan the Demon on Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Speaking of demons, there was one other. I played a reformed demon in Charmed, which was like three or four episodes of that, which turned out to be, I think, one of my favorite characters. Drake Demon was his name. It was a great, great character.
Really, and of course, the collector from Tales of the Crypt.
Another demon. I've played a few demons.
Interesting. There's a pattern here. Indeed.
Not the devil. A devil.
Indeed. Well, Billy, let's go ahead and jump into our audience questions. Well, we still got some time. Yes, let's go. Let's hit on into this. And our first question comes from Gene. What is your favorite genre to perform in?
Comedy. He says spitting. Comedy, Gene. I like comedy. The secret is I kind of play everything like a comedy, which makes the drama that much more kind of delicious. Because it's a little funny.
Right on. There you go, Gene. Thank you. Good one. From Brian, what is one film or TV show that you haven't been in that you'd like to be a part of?
That's a very good question. SNL.
Ooh.
And I would have said Community, but I got to do that, which was fun. I'm trying to think what are the new and fun comedies? It's always the comedies. Yeah, we'll leave it at SNL.
All right. Yeah, that works. Nothing wrong with that. Thank you, Brian. Great question. What do we have next?
Brian.
And here's one from Jeff. Do you have a preference of playing heroic or villainous characters? And if so, which one and why?
I like heroic characters. Villains are fun because I've enjoyed mining the psychology and at least a bit of the understanding and grounding the characters into some, tracking some reason. However, I feel there's a pressing need for white hat heroics and something to counter the kind of, let's just say maybe overused anti-hero in a lot of our narratives. I think the gray line between hero and villain has been so overdrawn that it's just, I think, young men and women have lost sight of what perhaps the markers of moral compass that I think movies provide as a reminder, at least aspirationally, have lost sight of that. Maybe at the time it was thought considered corny, but it works. It's practical.
Yeah.
So I like a slight traditional and nostalgic hero just because it's contrary and it's confident and doesn't succumb to the kind of seeming social pressures of having to be edgy, because it's not edgy to be dark. It's kind of commonplace. There was a time when dark was edgy. Now it's like, might as well get a tat and a piercing, no offense, but it's not the most unique thing. Was a time when that was a sign of individuality. Now you might as well be pulling from the preppy handbook. It's a uniform.
Yeah. And when we last had on and spoke about the Phantom again, I will always praise it for its lack of cynicism.
Yeah,
you know, but there's not the campiness either. I mean, it's a straight adventure that absolutely believes in itself and believes in the earnestness of the characters.
Exactly.
And Jeff, exactly. Great question. Thank you.
Very good question, and thank you.
And here's one from Andrew. How? I'll rephrase this slightly. How was the Phantom suit to wear, or suits, since there were multiple?
There were a few. They ripped deep. There wasn't much to them. They were beautifully decorative. Marlene Stewart, great job with the tribal tat printing. That's where the tats really seemed to work, was this kind of tribal overprint, which was pretty cool. But they were pretty unforgiving, very tight. You had to certainly have done your sit-ups and not strayed from the diet. And they breathed in the jungles of Thailand. They were practical because it breathed quite a bit. But they were tight, and they ripped a lot and didn't protect you every time you got cut or hit or dinged. You couldn't hide any pads in there, so lost a pound of flesh every day.
Was it during the making of, or did it come later that they asked you to do one of the Got Milk ads?
Don't recall. Must have been after, during the marketing.
Okay, there you go.
That was Robert Evans's idea. He approached them and said, "We should do a Got Milk ad." The legend, Bob Evans.
No, indeed. Andrew, great question. Thank you for that. And what do we have next? From Kevin. Have you kept any memorabilia from the sets that you've been on?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Fair, fair, fair. Or if I rephrased it, have you found yourself in possession of anything from the sets?
I can neither confirm
nor deny. There you go. There you go. There you go. And we will leave it
at
that.
But let's just say there are some certainly... There were definitely, items bound for the dumpster or for the tip that, they belong in a museum, I think is the quote.
Yeah.
To quote Dr. Jones.
There you have it. All right. There you go, Kevin. Thank you for that one. What do we have next? And here's one from Stephanie. What was your favorite memory when filming Titanic?
Spending time with the cast and the crew at right next to the studio that they built, basically, is on the cliff of this fishing village, really, in Rosarito. You go right outside the wall, and next door was the village itself, where a lot of the fishermen and the families operated, and some lived, and they had fairly makeshift cantinas right on the water. And rather than go to the caterer, which was wonderful, if you wanted an authentic fish taco and hang out on the shore and feel, it was just sitting there, which was so specifically and beautifully Mexican. And then, after an hour suiting up and being immersed in this, 1912 Tweedy mid-Atlantic aesthetic, was just so generous, incongruous, bizarre, the mariachi band serenading. We had my birthday there, in the little fishing shacks, and then you're back to business. And it was just the camaraderie of the experience, I think, was the most memorable thing.
There you go. Stephanie, great question. Thank you for that. What do we have next? And here's one from Anthony, who wants to know, who or what were you inspired by in cinema or television?
Blake Edwards and those fabulous early Pink Panther movies and that cocktail of Chic and Stupid that he did so well, which I thought was so funny, was just making fun of, the luxury space with Henry Mancini underscoring. And it was just ripe for a pratfall or a sight gag or the genius of Peter Sellers. Those movies just satisfied me to no end. Also from a lot of films from the 60s, the aesthetic, of the early Bond films, which were a more serious version of that aesthetic, was a big inspiration stylistically. John Ford, black and white, some of these classics, but also the disaster movies of the 70s. I remember going to the cinemas with friends, seeing the Poseidon Adventure and the Towering Inferno and CinemaScope and widescreen. Big cinematic experience. I remember seeing Jaws when I was 10 and Star Wars when I was, whatever that is, 11, mm-hmm. you know, in the first run, being old enough to appreciate those massive cinematic experiences, Raiders at first release, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Those early Spielberg films when, you know, which were made for a boy, a young boy and a young girl, really. And that period of wonder and discovery, I was right in the target and the hit zone, and it worked. It made me want to make movies and be the characters.
There you have it, Anthony. Great question. Thank you. I think we have time for one more. Let's see if we can go out on a really fun one. And this is going to come from Andre, who wants to know, if you could do a crossover with the Phantom into another fandom, what would it be and why?
That's an interesting question. I would have to, if we are staying with the timeline or modernizing, if playing a father to son handoff and theoretically I'm playing my own ancestor today, then crossing into fandom of this age, most likely it would have to be in the King world space, which is Lee Falk universe as well, the Mandrake the Magician, you know. But if it's cross-pollinating into, you know, I don't know if the Phantom would cross into DC or Marvel. So it's hard to say if that's ever happened. Have they crossed? Have those studios, design studios, cross-pollinated?
Not until somebody buys one out.
It's an interesting question. I think if one was to stay in the period, you know, 20 years later puts you in the 50s. Trying to think what took place there. I think it would be fun. So it's the same studio. And the last we left Crystal Skull with Dr. Jones was in the 50s. So I think and since Jeffrey Bohm wrote our version of the Phantom, who also wrote The Last Crusade, and it's keeping it in the studio family, I think crossing into the Raiders world as we're in the jungle, and it'd be kind of funny if Kit Walker came across Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. There, you know, that would be kind of fun.
That absolutely would be. I personally, I'd love to see an adaption of Jeff Parker wrote a series called King's Watch, which crossed over Phantom, Mandrake, and Flash Gordon, and it is superb. It is, though. It is one of the best.
King's Watch?
King's Watch. It was a miniseries, came out several years ago, and it's the best comic book version I've read of all three of those characters outside of their original strip form.
How interesting.
Yes.
Dom, make a note of King's Watch, would you?
King's Watch. Yeah, Dad, I think you would really enjoy it. And
who wrote it?
A fellow named Jeff, who's written some very, very good comics over the past several years, and is a good cartoonist.
What
as well.
Year was that? That's really interesting.
This was around 2012-ish, I want to say.
Hot put dog. Out by Dom. That sounds so fun.
I think you'd get a kick out of it. All the characters are absolutely right, and some fun stuff with the Phantom lore, Lothar, and all that. And Andre. Great question. Thank you so much.
Great question, Andre. Thank you.
And GalaxyCon viewers, this has been my time with Billy Zane. Billy, this has been an absolute blast.
Thank you as ever. Wonderful questions. Always fun spending time with you.
Pleasure is all mine. I always enjoy hosting you. Thank you once again for joining us on the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Thank you to our audience for joining us. And thank you all for your great questions. Hope to see everybody again soon. Until then, bye-bye. Take care. And remember, smiles are free. Spend them often.